Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
This is The Takeaway with MHP from WNYC and PRX in collaboration with GBH News in Boston.
The UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change says that the Earth's temperature will rise by 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit by 2040 if we don't curb our greenhouse gas emissions. In July, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres warned,
"Greenhouse gas concentrations, sea level rise, and ocean heat have broken new records. Half of humanity is in the danger zone from floods, droughts, extreme storms, and wildfires. No nation is immune. Yet, we continue to feed our fossil fuel addiction."
Now, curbing our planet's fossil fuel addiction is sure to be a massive, multi-decade effort, requiring unprecedented level of global cooperation. Or, we could just block out the sun.
First, the weather changed. War made the Earth even hotter. Her ice melted. And all their species crashed.
In the 2013 movie Snowpiercer and the TV series of the same name, that's exactly what we humans did. In the story, the Earth heated up in the 20-teens, and authorities sprayed chemicals into the stratosphere to deflect some of the sun's heat.
So the men of science tried to cool the Earth, to reverse the damage they had sown. But instead, they froze her to the core.
It triggered a new ice age, and a few survivors took refuge on a high-speed train hurtling across the global Antarctica on a constant loop. Scientists have debated this idea of essentially dimming the sun for decades, but research into making it a reality has recently won some powerful financial backers, including Bill Gates and a range of venture capitalists and philanthropists. It's an example of what's called geoengineering.
Geoengineering is a proposed scheme to have humanity actually control the world's climate. It comes in two flavors. One is to take the carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, which is causing the warming, and the other is to reflect some sunlight to cool the Earth.
That's Dr. Alan Roebuck.
I'm a distinguished professor of climate science in the Department of Environmental Sciences at Rutgers University.
Is this just holding a like a big piece of aluminum foil up to the sun and pushing it back the other way?
That's one of the proposed schemes. It's to put a reflector in outer space between the Earth and the sun. You could put a lot of little satellites or frisbees, shiny frisbees up there, or you could make a big one farther from the Earth, between the Earth and the sun. But most people think that idea is too expensive, too technologically questionable, and nobody's proposing that. The proposal that most people are studying is to inject sulfuric acid into the stratosphere, which would then form tiny little droplets, a thin cloud, which would reflect sunlight, just like volcanic eruptions do occasionally.
Just hearing you make that sentence, this injection that creates a cloud a bit like a volcanic eruption, at my gut, that feels like a bad idea.
Well, me too. The first meeting I went to, I had all these engineers and physicists talking about how cool it would be. And I started writing down reasons why it might be a bad idea. And I got up to 20 reasons and I published that 20 reasons why geoengineering might be a bad idea. And I've thought about it more since then. And now I'm up to 28 reasons. But I also have a few reasons why it could be beneficial. And if you could do it, the number one reason is it could reduce global warming and reduce the impacts of global warming.
28, why stratospheric geoengineering might be a bad idea?
Yes.
Maybe walk me through some of those 28 at least.
I'll first talk about effects on the climate system. If you reflect sunlight, you cool land more than you do the ocean. And it's the land-ocean contrast in the summer that drives the summer monsoons. And those that rainfall in Asia and Africa is important for agriculture. So the monsoons would be weaker and you get less rain there in the summer.
Monsoon sounds like something one would want less of, but in fact, they're actually quite important, right?
Yeah, monsoon just means seasonal rainfall. Here, where we live, I'm in New Jersey, you're on the East Coast, we get about the same amount of rain all year long. But there, It's dry in the winter. It's the winter monsoon. It's wet in the summer monsoon. And they depend on that rainfall for agriculture in China, in India, in the Sahel, and Western Africa.
So what would happen if, in fact, less rain fell?
That's not the only thing that would happen. Perhaps there would be temperatures would be lower. There would be more carbon dioxide. So we're using crop models to calculate what the response would be. And right now in India, for example, they're taking a lot of groundwater out for irrigation, which isn't going to last more than a couple more decades. But right now, changes of rainfall might not be as important as it would be in a couple decades when they actually are proposing to do this geoengineering.
Okay, give me some of your other 28 reasons.
Well, the particles in the stratosphere would deplete ozone, and that would mean more ultraviolet radiation would reach the surface. That would be bad for humans, for natural ecosystems, and probably bad for agriculture. You can't do it today if you wanted to. The technology actually doesn't exist. People have designed on paper airplanes that could fly that high and spray sulfuric acid or sulfur dioxide gas, but they don't exist now. So it might take a decade or more to develop them, and it's a question how well they might work. But let's assume you could do it, and you're doing it for a while and reducing global warming. Meanwhile, we continue to put in the gases in the atmosphere that are causing the warming. It's like pulling back on a spring. And if at some point you stop, there'd be rapid warming at a rate much faster than there would be if we didn't do anything. So this is called the termination effect.
Maybe just one more before I become too terrified to go on.
The question is, how could the world agree on what temperature we want the planet to be? How to set the thermostat? What if Canada and Russia want it a bit warmer? They don't mind it. They can exploit the Arctic. They spend less on heating. Whereas islands that are drowning now in the Pacific want it cooler. And so how could we even agree on this? Or you could say, well, okay, we know it's going to help most people, but some people aren't going to be as well off. And so we'll compensate them. There's not a good record of doing that in the past when you build a dam or do urban renewal. And also, we couldn't tell which specific impacts were directly caused. There might be drought somewhere or flood somewhere. You geoengineers are doing it. And you can say, well, that just might have happened by chance. Yeah, but I still want you to compensate me for it. Who's going to do that?
How would we decide, and who would get to decide what temperature we're going to set the Earth to?
It's a question of global governance. Global governance isn't working too well right now in mitigation, reducing the emission of greenhouse gases. There are huge economic interests at hand. So to develop a global governance structure that would allow everybody to agree on this hasn't been done, but people are working on how to do it.
That said, frequently in science and technology, when we are talking about advances and what is possible that aren't yet here, you know, we will hear these kind of doomsday scenarios. I'm thinking of everything from embryonic stem cell research to, the notion of sort of human cloning and how it's all going to be so, you know, troubling. And yet science and technology do, in fact, tend to march on. Is this being alarmist, or are there, you know, sort of important considerations to take into account, but we really should move forward towards this?
No, let's take a step back. Global warming is real. It's being caused by humans. It's bad for most people. We're sure of that. And we know the solution. We don't even want to be working on this. The solution is to leave the fossil fuels, oil, coal, natural gas, in the ground. Don't burn it and don't emit carbon dioxide. That's the solution. And we could rapidly transition to an energy system based on the sun and the wind. We already have the technology to do that, but economic interests are preventing that. That's the problem. So it's really a political problem. It's not a technical problem.
Talk a bit about why there might be more political will to do an interventionist geoengineering than to stop doing something like burning fossil fuels.
I read recently that the fossil fuel industry makes about $2.8 billion a day, and they have for the last 50 years around the world. That's $1 trillion a year, and that's enough money to pay every politician in the world to let them keep doing it. That's the problem. So the question is, who makes decisions? In some countries that don't have a lot of fossil fuels, they have a carbon tax. If you go to Europe and try to buy gasoline, it costs about three times what it costs the United States. That's the carbon tax. And they don't have huge SUVs and they don't drive as much. They have small cars when they do drive. So in the U.S., we per person, we emit a lot. And then China is burning coal, which is much less efficient at generating energy and producing lots of CO2. So what really we need to do is let China, India, and other developing countries raise their lifestyle to what we have without putting CO2 in. Can we provide the technology to them to do that? The price of solar panels is going down. The price of wind power is going down. Whether we can actually implement a carbon tax or a carbon fee and dividend, as the government collects the money and gives it back to the people, is a political decision, and we'll see how fast it goes. Now, as the impacts of climate change become more and more visible, people are a lot more aware. It's really hot now. It's hotter than it would have been if we hadn't been putting these greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. There are forest fires, stronger storms. And as people see that and feel the impact, terrible flooding we had in Kentucky just recently, people are worried about it. What can we do?
All right, let's take a pause here. More on The Takeaway in just a moment.
WNYC Studios is supported by Rocket Money. Did you know nearly 75% of people have subscriptions they've forgotten about? Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. Rocket Money will even try to negotiate your bills for you by up to 20%. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill, and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/WNYC. That's rocketmoney.com/WNYC.
There are four questions Jews ask to mark Passover every year. This Passover is leading many of us to ask more questions, once tied to our identity as Jewish Americans. I'm Matt Katz, and on the next Notes from America, we'll talk about hard conversations happening in Jewish communities right now, how we can heal our divisions, and why this Passover feels different. Available wherever you get podcasts.
We've been hearing from Professor Alan Robach about solar geoengineering and some of his 28 reasons why he says it's a bad idea. But he says it's still important to research all the possibilities.
I think we should see if we can actually fly a plane up there and do and create a cloud that we would like, see whether it's possible, how easy it is. And in the meantime, we have to work as hard as we can on mitigation. Because if we're not doing mitigation, if we're not actually trying to reduce the emissions, geoengineering will not be an answer. It will just be, you have to do a huge amount of it, and there could be a lot of bad consequences. But if we want to keep global warming to 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial temperatures, that's 3.5 degrees Fahrenheit. And we can't do that just with mitigation because we're slowly reducing the emissions. Maybe we want to shave off a little bit of the warming, keep it at 2 degrees rather than 3 degrees with geoengineering temporarily for a few decades. That's the scenario that people are looking at. Maybe we want to implement it like that. But the question is, would that be more dangerous to do that or dangerous not to do that? It's a risk-risk comparison. And we're doing climate modeling calculations to see what the potential impacts would be so we can make an informed decision in the future.
So if the plane that could fly up there, right, to make it the most simple, were in fact developed, if the technology were possible, if it were, you know, if we sort of tried this, are we talking about, in a best case scenario, a total reversal of the warming of the earth that we've caused? Are we talking about some degrees? I'm just wondering, in order to do a cost benefit analysis, to understand what the potential benefit is.
It depends how thick a cloud you create. So how many fleets of airplanes you have doing it. And it depends what temperature you want the planet to be. We know after a big volcanic eruption like the Pinatubo eruption in 1991, there was a very quick cooling of Earth. The cloud formed in a couple months and it reflected sunlight and it was colder the next year. Big volcanic eruptions like Tambora in 1815 produced a year without a summer where it was a degree cooler for a year. So we know that it could work. The question is, how much do we want to do? How much can we afford? On my list of benefits, the sun wouldn't be quite as bright. It would be like a thin haze, and plants like that would have beautiful red and yellow sunsets. On my list of risks or concerns is unexpected consequences. On my list of benefits is unexpected benefits. People say, what do you work on? Geoengineering, what's that? Okay, we're going to fly an airplane over your daughter's school, and we're going to spray sulfuric acid in the air, and that's going to solve the global warming problem. And they say, what? You want to do something that crazy? Well, maybe I should work much harder on mitigation, much harder on not producing CO2. So it might have this effect of scaring people into not doing it.
Is there a more moderate way, though? Because I suppose what I'd say is, on the one hand, no, of course I wouldn't trust that. But then I do trust the only life that I personally, as far as I can tell, get to live, to all kinds of technology every day, right? In terms of sort of how our world operates.
It depends on the scale. I mean, when you drive your car, you wear a seatbelt. So God forbid you have an accident, it will help you, it'll save you, but it won't destroy the whole world. So this is technology for the whole world. It's not just for much smaller scale activities. Now, we have to reduce our emissions of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases as quickly as we can. We have to do that no matter what. There is technology to take the carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, carbon dioxide removal, but it's very expensive, and people are working to see if they can do it at scale more effectively. And then the question is, where do you put the carbon dioxide? But we think there might be enough space underground to pump it, or you could make plastics out of it or something. So people are working on that too. And both of those things would reduce the warming. So we have to do that as quickly as we can. I've got solar panels on my house. I've got an electric car, but it costs a lot of money. The law was just passed. The government will subsidize purchases of electric cars. So there are things we can do to incentivize people to emit less. So that we have to do that no matter what.
Dr. Alan Robeck is Distinguished Professor of Climate Science in the Department of Environmental Sciences at Rutgers University. Thanks so much for taking the time with us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.